Ingle, Oladamare, Jenyami, Olorun, God, Jehovah, Allah, Amen-Ra, the many names for the original ancestor, the ancestor who sees all and knows all, the creator of the heavens and the earth. We do not pour libation to you, but this morning we come pouring libation in memory and honor of our ancestors and asking them to intercede with you on our behalf. We know that our ancestors, being in the spirit world, are closer to you, and there's a greater opportunity that our request will be granted. We ask this morning that you grant the listeners the willingness to open their hearts and their minds to the information that's going to be shared, such that they will hear the truth and then be able to act on the truth. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To our ancestors from Mother Africa, the ancestors who were the beginning of the human family that we now have, no matter what your ethnic or cultural background is, the beginning of human life as we know it was on the African continent. Every person on the face of the earth has as their original ancestor an African. We ask those Africans who were the first to conceive of a family, the first to plant a seed, the first to till the land, the first to domesticate animals, the first to navigate the mighty Nile River to Egypt, the first to build a skyscraper, the first to do surgeries, the first to explore the wonders of the galaxy, and as importantly, the first to conceive of the belief in one God. We ask those ancestors to come and be with us today, to bring their wisdom, their hard work, their ingenuity to all that we do. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To our ancestors who were murdered, displaced, diminished during our great Holocaust, our great Miafa, we do not forget you. We remember your unwilling sacrifice as your bodies are lying the Sahara and the Atlantic Ocean. We remember you and we honor you, and we ask that you come and be with us today. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. We ask our ancestors who gave us the great document, the Ma'at, to come be with us, bring your additional sense of honor and integrity as embodied by Ma'at to our discussions and our listings this morning. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To those ancestors from the Caribbean islands, from Brazil, from the southern parts of these United States, who through your unpaid labor laid the groundwork for the civilizations that are enjoyed by billions of people around the world. To those ancestors, we say we do not forget you. We remember your sacrifice, your hard work. And we ask that you come and be with us today to inspire us to also do the work required to correct a world that has gone mad. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. And to those ancestors who are yet to be born, those ancestors for whom we do good work, those ancestors to whom we pledge to honorably do righteous work all the time for ourselves, for our family, for our communities, so we can be correct to be able to benefit from the largesse that the Creator has provided for all of us. Ancestors, we pledge ourselves to continue to do work such that when you return, this place will be a better earth. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. And finally, we'd like to ask you and our audience to think of one of your ancestors, someone who you would like to be with us this morning. On the count of three, ask that ancestor to come and be with us. One, two, three. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We said libation, libation, libation. It is.
In solidarity with our brothers and sisters in the United States, we stand with you.
march on till victory. Let us march on till victory. Let us march on till victory. Is what.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people what they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Good afternoon, brothers and sisters. Hotep to all of you. Welcome to the Black Reality Think Tank. I am your host, Dr. William Rogers. So happy that you are able to join us again this Tuesday afternoon here on the Black Reality Think Tank. We have a wonderful guest, a very good friend, and very dear guided elder in our community, as well as a powerful health professional. She is the former commissioner of the Department of Health for Milwaukee County. And she is here with us here today to talk a little bit about more crisis in the black community. And so we want to kind of give our individuals, our folk, our people, a heads up as we get ready to approach those hostile winter months. So thank you so much for joining us. We are here, as I said, every Tuesday here on the timeforanawakening.com radio system network, which is also a part of the Black Talk Radio Network. And we are here with a community of other wonderful, fine programs as well that I will talk about at the top of the hour. But I want to get right into our discussion. I don't want to prolong it too much. As always, we do an ancestral profile, as you know, where we talk about those that have followed, we follow, and we want to just kind of highlight them. And as I've indicated before, it's just more than an ancestral profile that we do. We try to do a commentary, and we do it in a way that we obviously can show what our ancestors have done and why it is that we must continue this fight. We must continue to approach the same kind of zeal and vigor that they encountered did in terms of helping it possible for us to come forward. And so tonight I'm going to read about a brother, and I hope somewhere this has inspired some of our audience who are listening now to see what he did and hopefully follow in this type of path. I knew of this brother's work long before I knew of him, and I'd always heard wonderful and powerful things about it. But now we get a chance to kind of talk about him personally and what he did for our community and for our people. His name is Lawrence C. Jones. Lawrence Clifton Jones. He was born November 21st, 1882, and he transitioned July the 13th, 1975. He was the founder and the longtime president of a school called Piney Woods County Life School in Rankin County, Mississippi. He was a noted educational innovator. Brother Jones spent his adult life supporting the educational advancement of rural African American students in the segregated South. my brother, was when he learned about the Rankin County, Mississippi system, which had an 80% literacy rate, that Jones identified his personal mission. In 1909, Jones agreed to teach a poor youngster to read, and he soon found himself teaching a small group of students. He started the Piney Woods School with just $2 in his pocket and 3 students. He was a local freed, enslaved African named Ed Taylor, who gave Jones 40 acres. He gave him 40 acres and an abandoned sheep shed to start his Piney Woods School. After marrying Grace Morris Allen in 1912, Jones built a larger school to accommodate the large number of students interested in attending. And I want you to know, these were the sharecroppers. These were the tent farmers' children. These were the cotton fields of Mississippi, those who worked from sunup to sundown, even after the years of enslavement. A local white sawmill owner donated the wood for the building, and dozens of other donations arrived, including cattle for milk, a large amount of land near the school, and some cash. Throughout the rest of her life, Grace was pivotal in helping her husband fundraise for the school and by teaching courses in domestic service. Our brother wrote a book, and he wrote a book called How to Stop Worrying. I'm sorry, Dale Carnegie, the innovator, the motivator, wrote a book called How to Stop Worrying and Start Living. And he talked about how Brother Jones has survived a near lynching in 1918 by demonstrating to the white mob how passionate he was about the efforts to educate African-American children. There are several accounts of this incident, but there's one that Carnegie mentions that talks about that the lynch mob, even after they had attempted to do what they were going to do, decided to collect money and help Jones to support his school. Carnegie quoted him in saying, "No man can force me to stoop low enough to hate me." Jones is attributed with utilizing the Booker T. Washington model. Very clearly, we can see this. And that model was of training African Americans to be good workers. He followed the Jim Crow social codes of the South, and consequently his school thrived without controversy and with encouragement from white folks, even in the bloody Mississippi area. Jones taught students about agriculture, carpentry, dairy farming, and construction. And under his guidance, students were responsible for building many of the facilities on the campus, starting with the boys' dorm in 1922. In 1929, with the arrival of Martha Lewis Morrow Fox, who served as the first principal of the Mississippi Blind School for Negroes, was founded on that campus. It eventually moved to Jackson, Mississippi. With assistance from his wife, Jones led several singing groups across the South and the Midwest and the East on fundraising tours for the school. The schools organized a group called the Five Blind Boys of Mississippi, the Cotton Blossom Singers, and the International Sweethearts of Rhythm were three of the acts that were organized out of the Piney Woods School. Beginning in the 1930s, the school was sponsored baseball teams as a part of the fundraising efforts. Jones appeared on a TV program called This Is Your Life in the 1950s, and after telling his story, asked viewers to each send in $1 to support the school. This bid raised over $700,000, in which Jones began the school's endowment fund, which was reported to be at $7 million when Jones died in 1975. Jones received many honorary doctorates from Clark College, Cornell College, University of Dubuque, Audubon College. He also received an honorary Master of Arts degree from Tuskegee Institute. He was recognized for his contributions to the educations of African-American children by the University of Iowa when the college president, Virgil Hancher, named him one of the university's most outstanding alumni in 1954. Jones also sat on the board for the Mississippi Federation of Colored Women's Club and the State Executive Committee for the YMCA. He was also the author of several books, including Up Through Difficulties, published in 1910, Piney Woods and His Story, published in 1923, and The Bottom Rail, that was published in 1933. Jones received the Silver Buffalo Award, the highest commendation of the Boy Scout Award of America in 1970. Brothers and sisters, this is Lawrence C. Jones. Transition, July 13, 1975. And this is an example of a what we have been talking about over the months and years right here at the Black Reality Think Tank of neighborhood schools, Saturday schools. Here's a brother who took a Saturday school and turned it into one of the finest institutions there was. I used to hear about the Piney Woods School for Boys when I was young. And I used to hear people talk about very powerful things. And considering where it started, in one of the bloodiest, ugliest states on the planet Earth, he was able to achieve by just simply dedicating and having a plan and an agenda and carrying it through. So these are the kinds of folk that we just want to talk about from time to time and profile and obviously encourage all of us to look at things of that nature and begin to try to pull together those things. We need that now. These are the times that we need that. There are some difficult days here. We just had a discussion a couple of weeks back about what the COVID situation is going to do to our children. We talked about that in detail, and we indicated this virtual learning and some of the things that we are doing in that virtual learning process that is just going to be catastrophic, and how it's going to affect the long-term effect of our children. So I think we need to be mindful of that and try to offer solutions, and even if we can't do it, maybe we can support those who can do it and get out and let's save our children. Okay, today, my brothers and sisters, we are talking about the African American community and the twindemic, and we are asking the question: will 2021 be the winner of our discontent? The twindemic, the deadly COVID-19, coupled with the influenza, which usually comes about in the winter. How will the African American community to survive that? What can we do to be ready to deal with it? Are we ready to deal with it? What are the possibilities of prevention for ourselves and for our children? And already we're beginning to see the escalation. There's all kinds of prediction, and we're going to ask Dr. McManus to talk about some of those predictions that this is going to get worse in the months to come. I just read today that the Minnesota Vikings and the Tennessee Titans will suspend some of their activities because a couple of their players caught the COVID on Sunday in their game. New York City, I understand, has now had one of its worst days of an increase of COVID. So are we going to be ready? What about the African-American men? When it first started, I remember back around March, the black community here in Milwaukee was getting hit very heavily. There were certain specific regions of the city that were just being devastated by this whole thing. So I've asked Dr. Patricia McManus, who is the former health commissioner for the city of Milwaukee, and she is the current CEO of the Black Health Coalition of Wisconsin, Incorporated, to help us and to discuss with us how the African-American community will fare health-wise. Can we prepare for this oncoming slot as being predicted? What are the challenges facing our community? Are there preventative measures that we can rely upon? We keep hearing about vaccines and shots and taking this and taking that. Can we rely upon those things? So these and other questions we want to talk about with Dr. McManus and our audience that are here And I'm so happy again that you all have joined us. And I hope that we can walk away from here with something that really can make a difference in our community. So with that, I want to say good afternoon, good evening, Dr. McManus. How are you?
Well, good evening. I'm doing good. How about you?
Okay, great. Doing great. Thank you so much for joining us. You have always come when I call you. I appreciate you so much. Love you to death. We've known each other a long time, you know, so.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm
that's
so happy
right.
that
call,
you
call, I come.
Long time to be with us.
That's just automatic.
That's right, you know. Exactly. Okay, Twindemic, black community. Let's start there. What we got going on here?
Well, it's something that, as usual, it's not just the black community. It's what the whole country is moving towards. You know, just in terms of a yearly piece.
Right.
They've been 30 to 40 deaths, 40,000 deaths across the country from the flu. Even with the flu vaccine, you still have that number of people dying yearly from that. So then if you put on top of that what's been happening, just the standard in terms of the COVID-19, there are projections of possibility a lot more deaths. And unfortunately, as you mentioned, when this first started, it did hit the black community, not just in Milwaukee, but black communities all over.
All over, yeah.
The elderly, you know, in terms of what happened. And the question became, I think, if nothing else, for the most part, even though we don't do as well as we should, I think the African-American community is trying to take better care of the elderly. It seemed like that the majority of the elderly, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but it was clear that the majority of the elderly who died in the beginning were in nursing homes,
mm-hmm.
or living in those senior citizen places. Mm-hmm. So part of it was them being all lumped together. Part of the reason them being all lumped together in a place like that where you got full of elderly black people.
Mm.
Certainly was one of the factors. The other factor is age, obviously, and a weakened immune system, in which, again, just age will do that, and then being hit by something as deadly as COVID-19.
Right.
Certainly, additionally. Another issue to look at is, and I just did a 4-hour, 3.5-hour presentation on historical trauma today, actually, and to talk about the fact that one of the things is, I mean, because they can even prove it now, which we could have proved a long time ago, but they're certainly showing that there's intergenerational trauma that also not only affects you psychologically, but your physical body. And if you look at 4 decades of our being mm-hmm. here, and what they're talking about, and some of the research was actually done in Madison, where it looks at, like, you can't change the way a gene is.
Right.
I mean, yeah, DNA, but you can change how it operates. And they begin to prove it's a substance called cortisol, which is a stress hormone. And when people are under stress, it produces, and weakens the immune system. It does all the things I've kind of been talking about. And so they haven't talked about that, but I've talked about it. We've talked about it in terms of knowing that, because they kept saying, well, are black people just, they always want to go to inherently thinking there's something genetic about us.
Right.
That, you know, that, and I think our genes are stronger than, you know, the only reason we're still around here. But looking at, so I didn't think we are stronger, but looking at the fact that the damage our bodies have taken over the last, excuse me, last 4 decades. Excuse me, I got it.
Mm-hmm.
This is allergy season too, so it really has hit me pretty hard. I always get allergies. I have allergies, so, and we have that enough snow, not that I want anymore, but
right.
It's there. So there's multiple things in turn. I just say, you know, black people living in the United States, that's a risk factor.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah, just being in America, just being under the stress of this country, you know. And then,
there you go. And then, exactly, and it is. It does impinge on your not only your mental health, but your physical health.
Yes, definitely mental health.
In terms
health.
Of
yeah.
that. Mm-hmm. And so then understanding that, and like I said, yes, we are looking forward. Now, I mean, this is flu season. coming up, and pretty much now, between from October to I've just been talking to some people and some public health piece around that, because we're looking at doing a grant or something to get information out to people. But they're looking like a January till from February to January, as you call it, the twindemic is going to be there. The other part of it too is that it's recently talked about that they found another strain of the COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
So a new strain of that is out now apparently, and it's, if possible, more deadly than the first.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So, yeah.
Mm.
So, but just those two together, again, the people who are going to be the most affected by it, the most vulnerable, are the elderly again, and certainly elderly with any pre-existing conditions, like myself. You know, I've been in and out, and I pretty much have stayed home, even though my family had, you know, birthday parties for the kids and all that kind of stuff. I love you dearly, guys, but I'm not going to any to arrest the rest. Yeah, the restaurants and the bars are clearly the main thing, but we do have to. So even in talking about what can we do, I think elderly people who are at home by themselves definitely need to be checked on a lot more. They haven't said the number, but there's a few. I mean, not a whole lot, but least of those deaths, I would say somewhere between 5 and 10 of them, there were people who were living alone and they were found dead. You know, so I have been encouraging people, you know, anybody who lives alone, check on them, you know.
Right.
That we can do, and if they need to go to the hospital or get them in, we can try to get that. But the what they call the protective or mitigating factors, you know, the things like wearing the mask, you know, keep your distance. You know, they talk about at least 6 feet. I tell people try 12 or even 18 because you just don't know. It's an airborne disease that they finally admitted to. It's the airborne. It may be carried through the air, airborne. When they really say airborne, that means it could be just floating out there. When they say that, if that makes sense to people.
Right, exactly.
You know, before they're talking about the sneezing and the coughing, like I was just doing, that projects it. And that happens too. But it's also, they're pretty much just figured out that it's just airborne on its own.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't just, I'll just take my mask off, you know. And the key thing is you're around your family. You always have to be careful who your family sees too.
Right,
because
exactly.
It spreads that.
Exactly.
You know, so they've got to be careful.
And then you got this holiday coming up. You got Thanksgiving where everybody gets together, and Christmas coming up, and you know, so folks are going to get together. You're right. You're right about that.
Yeah. And people are kind of, you know, it's odd. I mean, for one thing too, that's kind of antithetical for us as Black people is that we like being together.
Yeah, we do.
We like.
Yeah, we rest. That's us. We're communal.
That's where we get a lot of strength.
Yeah, we're communal.
You know,
yeah, we're communal. That's our spirit. That's our African nature.
So, yeah, and this disease is definitely an anti-communal. It's anti that.
Yes, it is.
I mean, so just get used to that, and the things that, like I said, we automatically would do it. So it affects it mentally and physically, which then weakens again. How you are, depending on who you're with and what's going on. Like I said, my family, I tease my family because I said, look, they threaten violence if I leave my house.
Right.
They do everything for me, and I sneak out.
I know what you mean. And the same me, because I have not left.
They like, no, Granny,
yeah.
No.
I have not left my house. The last time that I went out the door, I think it was at the end of February. I have not left since then to go anywhere, and I'm beginning to look like a werewolf because my hair is all over the place, and the grandkids come by a lot. They come all the time, you know, back and forth. But I'm good. But still, I want to get out. I want to do stuff. And you know,
that's what I'm saying. I like to do my grandkids, they come and, you know, shop and wash, we do all this kind of stuff, and I love them for that, you know.
Right.
I like to
Yep.
grocery shopping sometimes, and So, but what I do, I just make sure that those things that, that you are doing, just see the people that, that you don't know, or if you do see them, you know, because it's automatically a hug. I mean, at the beginning of this, it was hard. It, I could do that, you know, and they're like, oh, oh, okay, no, we can't do that. You can't do the normal things that we do. It's so antithetical to, again, who we are.
Right,
like I said,
exactly.
It really is black.
Let me ask you this. So, Dr. Fauci's predictions that we've been hearing him continuously lament about, that the coming winter is going to be rough. Is that correct to the best guesstimation of health professionals? Is that correct?
I would say yes. And you know, he always, I like him, number one. I trust what he says, because he's not going to let anybody try to work with folks, but he don't let nobody push him around. And plus, even now, he just totally contradicts the president when he says, or these other folks, he just shuts them down. I think he's tired of them. I mean, they just decimated the Center for Disease Control, where you really could get really solid information.
Right.
But I think he's right. As much as he knows, like he'll always do that, because you can't say, when I talk to other people, I say too, again, this is a new virus.
Right.
And so it's not finished maturing. It's not finished changing. So it'll do different things. So the best they can do is say what they know now.
Okay.
And then maybe project a bit about what they think. This is what he's doing now. But I do think the projection is valid.
Okay, so when you make that projection, what are you basing that on as a in terms of health analysis? What is that being based on when he said that the winter's going? How do you know that? It's not like you look at the weather where you go out and you look at how the clouds are moving and things like that. What is it in the health?
No, when he says that, he's not talking about the winter weather. He's talking about the fact that these two conditions will be going on at the same time.
Oh, okay.
That's what he means.
Okay.
Not that, no, he's not, when he says that, he's not talking about the winter, the weather being worse. He's talking about the fact that these two are in line together, and that COVID is still developing what it is, and the flu itself is the problem. That's what he's talking about.
Okay. So, is the flu shot the thing to do? We hear so much controversy about that. What's your...
Yeah, right. And I tell people, because the shot itself has been there a long time. I mean, you know, it's not something coming up right away to take. I think people, like I always tell, people have to make their own decisions. But it really, I mean, my daughter, we were just talking today because, and I didn't even realize, because she didn't tell me that, because my one grandson died. She was pregnant with him, and then she ended up delivering him early, and it was like 4 or 5 days after she'd had a flu shot. So she hasn't had one, but she said she was getting one now. And she never told me that she hadn't had a flu shot, you know. So I'm listening to this today. We're sitting there talking. I'm like, huh? Really? She's like, yeah. She said, I don't know. I just blamed it on that because it happened. It may not have had anything to do with it, because we did find out that he had a heart condition and everything. Because she agreed to the autopsy and stuff. She wanted to have it because she really wanted to know what happened. But all of a sudden, but he had a heart condition and everything else, and that did it. So if you align, if something happens that you know of or is close to it, it's going to make you think, and that's on anything, let alone this. So as far as do I think, I mean, it's been around enough. I mean, and like anything else, nothing's 100%.
Right.
When you have surgery, when you go into a hospital and have surgery, it's not 100% you coming out of
it. No,
surgery.
You're not. No, no.
It's the same kind of thing, and that's why I believe that you can't tell people what to do. You can only give them the best information that you have, and everybody has to make their own decision about it.
Right, exactly.
But as long as it's not something else that, you know, I mean, we talk about Tuskegee. I was telling folks, I said, I don't know about if folks should just because you're black as a health professional, that don't mean it necessarily. I said, because Tuskegee was a black institution. They knew what they were doing.
Right.
They went to a black institution. They had black doctors. They had black nurses running around, having those men come back, even after they knew that even they discovered penicillin would cure them, and not tell them. To me, being a black nurse, I just cringe when I think about it. But that was many years ago. But it makes you wonder, like, how many of us still work that may not tell us what. See, I'm not going to, people know me, I'm not going to do that.
Right.
I'm going to talk to them what they need to think about, but they tend to. And there was I have to go back and look and see exactly when, but this was like in the, I want to say the late 90s or something. It didn't get a lot of play, and I don't know how I found out about it, but they were doing testing supposedly a vaccine on pregnant women.
Okay.
But oddly enough, it was on black women they were doing. They
right.
had a site in Zaire, and then they had a site in Chicago, in California. And then the statistician, the white man for that matter, it was his job to look at all the data and stuff, and he really was feeling that if they had babies dying more than they should based on the calculation.
Absolutely.
You know.
Right,
and
exactly.
Then after they wouldn't do anything, he blew the whistle, and that's when Thatcher was there mm-hmm. over mm-hmm. CDC. So it's just kind of like, if you just get decent people, no matter what color they are, if they're going to be able to tell the truth, that's what he did.
Okay.
He just called it, you know. They knew that there was a problem with it.
Exactly.
I mean, it just makes you question, but you have to, and all you can do is just give people the information, and the folks that just got to make the decision.
Make the decision.
That's best
then.
For them and
right.
their family.
Well, you know, I know you've always been very, very strongly community-minded. Even in starting, you know, the Black Health Coalition and some of the work that you've done
yes.
in terms of the African-American community. Now, I don't know whether this question I'm about to ask you is ethical. If it's not, then you know, I understand if you don't answer. But
okay.
if you were the health commissioner of Milwaukee now, what would be your focus in light of this news that's coming about? What would you be warning or saying to the community at this point? That needs to happen, because actually I haven't heard anything from the health department other than get the shot.
Yeah, well, yeah, they. I haven't heard anything from them either, and but it would clearly be that they would need to shut back down again, because they should uh-huh. never open.
Okay.
The city should never open in the first place. So that's when they thought they had the Democratic National Convention coming, so they augmented some of the strategies or criteria for when you open and don't open, because they wanted to get open faster.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
they open fast.
Right.
And now, even though they have the criteria, so they're still trying to get around.
Right.
Doing it. But I would, as a commissioner, I probably wouldn't have a job, because I would say you got to shut it down.
Exactly.
And you're in this, you're in this kind of quagmire, whatever words you want to call it, because you understand people who have businesses. This affects them.
Yeah.
You know.
And they're hurting. I know they're hurting.
But mm-hmm. it hurts. Hurts, yeah, a lot. But then you sit there and let more people die.
Dying, too. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. We're not talking about somebody just being a little sick a few days and then getting better.
Right.
We're talking about people dying. We're talking about, and their kids dying, too. People think they're not. The kids are. They're definitely spreaders. Kids are just, you know, kids.
Right. What school?
Anyway.
That was a school district just a couple of days ago. They shut it down again. Those three or four kids got the COVID. Where was that? Somewhere.
Yeah, these were more of the voucher or private schools that opened anyway.
Right.
The NPS, the NPS had agreed to shut down. They stayed shut down.
Okay. All right.
They have allowed, depending on my understanding, I'm sure that, I don't know of any NPS school that's allowed. It's all virtual.
Right.
They haven't gone back
exactly.
to the
right.
and then
right.
a month
right.
ago I was asked to speak to the coaches or the staff that works with the students in terms of before school and after school, and their plan was really pretty good in terms of what they're going to do, not going to do. Their stuff has been written out
right.
in terms of how they work with them, and so I just added on top to answer some questions and things like that with them. That they sounded pretty clear, and this is like I said, this is NPS, but these, if you look at the schools, especially the colleges, you know, UWM and Marquette, UW Madison,
mm-hmm.
these folks are just
oh yeah, UW Madison,
like,
yeah, they really, yeah, mm-hmm.
yeah, yeah, and Marquette too. Marquette had to close, and they just closed another one of their dorms.
Okay,
and so the problem with it, back to what you're saying, is that. To try to control that level of what people do without having a clear direction for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, these other
right.
places that had it, I mean, unfortunately, they may be dictatorial places, but they do control and say, okay, we're shutting it down and there's no conversation. It's shut down.
Right. Exactly.
But even those now are like China and all these other places that had shut down and got their positivity rates down and things like that. They're coming back up again. That's why they're pretty much saying that it looks like a second wave is coming in, or a second virus, because they have, a second strain. They have identified apparently a second strain of the COVID.
That's what I read, that and like I said, it's
probably the most deadly virus that they've had in a long, long time. So that in itself, and it changes, and so that's what, for health professionals even like me, it's hard to just say definitively. You know, I can say in terms of the mitigating things I talked about,
right,
wear a mask, you know, 6 feet, like I said, I say a little bit longer than that, 6 feet, wash your hands, avoid large crowds.
Right.
That's about all that you can really tell people, and stay more around your family and not, you know, if your family are going to things that other people, then you don't go.
Exactly.
You know, and
exactly.
One of my grandkids, her and her fiance, they got it. It was her birthday weekend, and his family lives in Chicago, and so they must have bumped into somebody, but
right,
they came
yep,
back and said,
yep,
thank God,
right,
they survived it.
And people, as you look around, people are being risque with this. You know, somehow the others,
yeah,
like,
absolutely,
they're not understanding. And that's one of the reasons why we here at the Black Reality Think Tank, we are trying to keep talking about this. I had Dr. Janae James on back here a couple of weeks ago, and she's been talking about it. And now she's going to do some other things. And I think Dr. James is on the line. Dr. James, is that you? Dr. James, are you on the line? I thought that was her number, but maybe not. But anyway, she's been talking about it, and her coalition of doctors are starting a website. They've developed a website. I'll have more information about it for our next Black Reality Think Tank, where to go on, and you can ask questions and then maybe even talk to some doctors, you know, if you're experiencing some things and you're not sure and you can't get out here, you know, to do
that.
That's
good, because, Cream City,
Cream City,
is
right,
really,
exactly.
They've been very active.
Exactly.
You know, they've been,
and that's good.
And I had called them. Yeah, like I said, this grant that I turned in yesterday to the state to do some education within the community about this whole thing about the pandemic and the flu, specifically, but also just in general, but in a safe space. Because when you talk to most health professionals, especially some of the white ones, too many of the white ones,
mm-hmm,
if you, even that controversy when I was a commissioner, and this woman called into to 860, and she was more or less saying what she heard, kind of like what you said, that people have concerns, they don't know what to trust or not.
Right.
And so my comment to them, the science, you know, isn't completed or whatever. Boy,
exactly.
I tell you, they just wrote up stuff and on Facebook and every place about that's not true. And and you should just, because what she said, I said for one thing, I said, contrary to thought, nobody knows everything. And
right,
neither does the National Institutes of Health or anybody else. And that when I say that it's not, doesn't mean that there aren't things that have some reliability, like some of the vaccines that had very little problems with them over time.
Mm-hmm.
Over time.
Mm-hmm.
People can have more trust, you know, to give it a try.
Mm-hmm.
But she goes, I said, so I'm respecting what she thought, you know, and she says, white woman,
right,
exactly. No,
exactly.
We tell them what to think. That's what she does. She wrote it on Facebook. We tell them what to think.
Mm-hmm.
I think I must have got her so upset she forgot what she was doing, because even to put that in writing was really stupid. But that's what, but she told the truth,
mm-hmm,
because that's how they operate.
Mm-hmm.
They tell us what to think, and if we're stupid enough to do that without even getting any question on, they don't go around telling their own people that.
Right.
And I actually had a couple of calls when that was going on from NIH, and go to show you how it is. The woman couldn't tell. She said, I can't tell you a last name, or I'm not even using the right phone number. She said, but I just wanted to let you know, because apparently this went all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I just wanted to let you know that you were right. You know, that I said, because science is exactly that. It's not, it can change, all that kind of stuff. But see, we're so stupid. We just listen to them and we do whatever they say. And I guess I was supposed to do that in my role as commissioner.
Exactly.
And I'm not going to do that in role as commissioner or being Patrick Manis on this phone right now. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say something that I don't feel or understand.
Right.
So it really is. So the best thing is, like I said, if folks have a real, and even these trainings we want to do is not to tell people they're wrong, but it's to let black people talk, because there's only going to be black people there
mm-hmm.
that we're going to have. To feel right. comfortable talking. If they say, I'm not going to take, I'm not going to give my kids the flu shot, then all you can do is give them the information and they have a right to make a decision.
Make that decision.
Now, the only thing I say for sure, like I told you yesterday, now they asked me about this madness that Trump has. I'll tell people in a minute, don't y'all take that stuff? That what I would say, because it just violates all protocol.
Okay.
Like I said, it normally takes 4 years to even begin to think a vaccine is okay. And you're going to do it in 8 months?
Mm-hmm.
No. And then he lies, just like he told people he took that hydroxychloroquine. He didn't take that. He hates medicine.
I know, yeah.
He didn't take none, but the folks believe him.
Right.
Because he said he took it.
Yeah.
No, he didn't. And so that's different, just because you want to try to make yourself look good,
mm-hmm.
and you got folks who they don't trust it and take it because he said so. Now, like I said, if they take it because they want to take it and believe that they want to, that's different. Like I said, people should have the right to do that, but not when you're supposed to have a trusted, whether it's the president or whether it's a doctor or whatever, if you trust them and know that they, that what they're talking about, they know it's not right. He
right.
knows that stuff.
Exactly.
And like I said, he's not taking the vaccine. He didn't take that other medicine. And you got folks just, because his so-called friend, what was his name? Herman Cain. He went to that.
Oh, yeah.
Tulsa and died. And you didn't hear one word out of Trump's mouth about, I'm sorry, my friend died or nothing like that. But he went there. He didn't have a mask on. He sat
right.
in the middle of the crowd with everybody else. And,
right.
Later, he's dead.
That's right.
So, I mean,
one of the things that have always been a concern for the African American community, and it's rightfully so, is the spirit and the ghost of Tuskegee's type stuff. The Tuskegee experiment
right.
type of mess goes on, and it always makes us suspect. And I've even heard
yeah.
that with this COVID situation, as well as the flu shot. That I've heard people talk about the possibilities of that type of thing. Is there anything that you can say to us about that? I mean, we can't deny Tuskegee. We can't deny the intention of what it was supposed to do. But is that a possibility in 2020 to look at something like that? What do you think?
Well, prior to Trump being the president, I would say no, because it was pretty, people were doing stuff that was pretty solid. But now that he's involved with stuff, I that's why I said I wouldn't tell anybody
right.
to take, for one thing, just knowing for a fact that they're doing it too fast.
Right.
And that's why I said I would not encourage or anybody to take it. But if they feel they need, again, people have that's their right to go ahead and do it. I don't think there's any grand conspiracy to get rid of black folks any more than there usually is.
Right.
Because what that tends to happen is that we tend to kill ourselves. They don't have to kill us.
Right.
We still do so many things that we shouldn't be doing that's not good for our health.
Yeah.
They could give you the gun, but they don't pull the trigger. That's why we've got to do better in taking care of ourselves and
right.
taking care of our kids, families.
Exactly.
Then we wouldn't be so susceptible to what's going on and blame somebody else, about it. We have to look at ourselves in terms of what have we done or what are we doing to be healthier, so that we, knowing what I just talked about in terms of the research that's been done in terms of we are affected by being here for these 400 years. It's weak,
mm-hmm.
the weakened system.
That's right.
And so that's just automatic.
No doubt.
Because
and then,
you understand you're doing something.
Now, the twindemic you've been talking about,
mm-hmm.
The Racine shootings, the George Floyd type stuff
mm-hmm.
that's going
mm-hmm.
on,
Ocean.
Breonna
it's
Taylor
Ocean
stuff.
Shooting.
Yeah, what is that doing along with that to the psyche of African people? You think, as a professional,
well, it's what it's doing is, I mean, it when you look at it, it's not doing any different than what it's been doing, but it does bring it more to the forefront, obviously.
Okay.
In terms of how we still get killed, or that we have that's another major risk factor, especially for black males. We know that.
Right.
And that hasn't changed in some ways with Trump pumping up his white, you know, folks who hate us anyway, all the way back to when they used to be the folks that handled us when we were in slavery. These are the same white males who haven't changed over 400 years, and so that's there. But in some ways, it has. I don't know, when you have like Breonna Taylor, none of those cops got charged with anything. But then a cop who shot into a white neighbor's home, didn't nobody get killed, gets three charges against him.
Yeah.
Because the woman's bullets went to white neighbor's home. I mean, that's welcome to our world.
Right. And that's frustrating. That is really frustrating.
And I think maybe your point to it, or asking me, is that does that add stress to us? Absolutely. Absolutely. Anytime you see that level of unfair treatment, and not only unfair treatment, but actual targeted treatment, it's gonna stress us out, and it's gonna send more cortisol through our system, and then it's gonna weaken our immune system,
that's
make us more liable to get other things. So in that way, yes, all those things affect us. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, listen. Let's do this. Let's take a break. Let you get some water. Fill up your teacup. And when I come back, I want to talk about just very briefly some of the things that our people can do, families can do, mothers and fathers can do with children, old folks like me that can do. I'm sitting here at home by myself, you know. What are some things that you would recommend for us to be able to do? And then I'm going to open it up and let our audience ask any questions or make any comments that they might have. So let's take a quick break and I'll be right back, okay?
All right.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me, yeah. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me. Ooh, and I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea, you know how I feel. River running free, you know how I feel. Blossom on the tree, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me, and I'm feeling good. And fly out in the sun, you know what I mean, don't you know? Butterflies all having fun, you know what I mean. Sleep in peace when day is done, that's what I mean. And this old world is a new world and a bold world for me. When you shine, you know how I feel. Scent of the pine, you know how I feel. Oh, freedom is mine, and I know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's
We all agree tonight, all of the speakers have agreed, that America has a very serious problem. Not only does America have a very serious problem, but our people have a very serious problem. America's problem is us. We're her problem. The only reason she has a problem is she doesn't want us here. And every time you look at yourself, be you black, brown, red, or yellow, a so-called Negro, you represent a person who poses such a serious problem for America because you're not wanted. Once you face this as a fact, then you can start plotting a course that will make you appear intelligent instead of unintelligent. What you and I need to do is learn to forget our differences. When we come together, we don't come together as Baptists or Methodists. You don't catch hell because you're a Baptist, and you don't catch hell because you're a Methodist. You don't catch hell because you're a Methodist or a Baptist. You don't catch hell because you're a Democrat or a Republican. You don't catch hell because you're a Mason or an Elk. And you sure don't catch hell because you're an American, because if you was an American, you wouldn't catch no hell. You catch hell because you're a black man. You catch hell, all of us catch hell for the same reason. So we are all black people, so-called Negroes, second-class citizens, ex-slaves. You are nothing but an ex-slave. You don't like to be told that. But what else are you? You are ex-slave. You didn't come here on the Mayflower. You came here in a slave ship, in chains, like a horse or a cow or a chicken. And you were brought here by...
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
We are back, my brothers and sisters. We are here with Dr. Patricia McManus, who is the former Commissioner of Health for the City of Milwaukee and who is currently the CEO of the Wisconsin Black Health Coalition. And she is talking about the twindemic that we are going to be facing, as well as some of the other health disparities that plague our community and what we can do about it as a community and as people. So we're going to open our lines up very shortly to take questions from some of you. If you are interested, those of you who are internet audience and you are interested in talking with Dr. McManus or either asking her a question, you can do so by calling area code 215-490-9832. And I repeat, 215-490-9832. And we can take your questions or either your comments if you have some. I want to just simply mention very quickly, we have a wonderful lineup of other programs that are a part of this Time for an Awakening Network, which is a part of the Black Talk Radio Network. On Mondays, from 11 to 1, my dear brother Oshiemi Adelabu hosts a program called African Perspectives. African Perspectives, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And then on Monday evenings from 6 p.m. to 8, Acres of Diamonds with host Brother Jihad Ahmed. Acres of Diamonds, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And then from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central. Black Therapy Central, who's hosted by Dr. Mawaya Cambone and Sister Nataki Cambone. Black Therapy Central, Monday afternoon, Monday evenings, from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the Time for an Awakening Network. And then from 9 to 10 on the first and third Mondays of every month, Conversations of Reparations with the group from NCOBRA. Conversations on Reparations every first and third Mondays from 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And then on Tuesday, guess what? Black Reality Think Tank from 8 to 10 Eastern Time, right here. And then on Thursday, we have a wonderful conversation program format with a group of young millennials called After 7. And they are here from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday. And the host is Shani B. And wonderful dialogue, conversations about family, community, children, education, and so forth. Then on Fridays, the brothers who are the organizers of this platform, Brother Elliot out of Philadelphia, has a program called Time for an Awakening from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. every Friday evening right here at this network. And then on Saturday, from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern, Black Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. Black Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. Mrs. Chambers is a psychotherapist, and she talks about stress and trauma and some of those issues that we're talking about tonight that are being affected by our community from COVID and so many of the other catastrophic events that are occurring in Black life. And then on Saturday evenings from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern, the Elders of Sankofa with our host, Brother Alfonso Watkins. Brother Watkins has been out for a while with due to weather conditions and the brief illness that he is encountering, and hopefully that he will be able to join us very soon. But it's a very dynamic program. Last Saturday, we had Dr. Jenny James to come on and lead our discussion and talking about eldership in our community, something that's also very, very much needed. Dr. McManus is also a part of that group as well. And we are looking to continue that discussion even on this Saturday. But Brother Alfonso is out right now, and hopefully he will be back soon. And then finally on Sundays from 7 to 9, Time for an Awakening again with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard right here on the Time for an Awakening .com network. All of our programs are archived. You can go back in and get copies of any program that has aired previously by simply going to www.timeforanawakening.com, www.timeforanawakening.com, and go to the search portal and look at any of the programs: African Perspectives, Black Reality Think Tank, Black Sister Talk, Elders of Sankofa, and you will be able to listen to any of the programs that have previously aired. So we're going to go back to Dr. McManus. We're so appreciative of her coming on tonight and just talking about something that we really, really better pay attention to, and that is the coming of the winter months and this twindemic. And those of you who live here in Wisconsin, you know what the winters are like. We know what we have to do and begin to do. So this is information, and even in the southern states there, it's still hostile. And as I said, we're already beginning to get the indicators from outside. Just today, there was an article that the Minnesota Vikings, excuse me, and the Tennessee Titans have had to suspend some of their activity due to several of their players encountering the COVID-19. Schools are now having to re-shut back down because some of the students and faculty and teachers are catching the COVID-19. So this is nothing to play with. Whatever your theory might be of what it is and why it's here and what it's doing, it's still killing people. And that's what we need to be mindful of. And then also coupled with that, the stress that we are encountering in our day-to-day community life, along with this, we have to pay attention to that, my brothers and sisters. And we have to pay attention to it as it relates to our children. How are our children handling this? And I ask my grandkids a lot about what they think about certain things and what they say about issues. And I remember one of them came over here the other day, and I said, "Hey, guy, you doing? Give me a hug." Grandpa, you got the COVID. You know the COVID stuff. I can't hug you." And I said, "Oh." So I said, "Okay."
That's good.
Right? And I'm glad. I said, "Okay, that's cool. I appreciate that." So anyway, we're doing that. So, Dr. McManus, what do we need to look at? All right, let me start by here. Okay, let's go with the elderly first. Okay, I do get a flu shot every year. I did get one last year around the end of February. In February, I got it at St. Joseph. That was before COVID hit real big. And I haven't been out since then. What do I do now? How do I get a flu vaccination if I want one? Is there some way I can go real quickly, or is there somebody that they're coming to the house and doing it? Or, you know, how do myself and other elders of our community address that?
I don't know of any home doing flu vaccines, but again, depends on if you have a physician, if you have your own physician, to see whether they are doing it. A lot of them are doing just straight telemedicine, so they not have people coming into their office. The community health centers, like Org Health Services, they're doing them and they're open.
Okay.
Off of MLK.
Exactly.
Or the hospitals. But I would call all these places first before I went there, because sometimes they do them, but they don't do them at the same time. All the pharmacies, CVS,
Walgreens. Pharmacies are doing them? Okay. All right.
They're doing them, right. Need to check to see what the times are. But yeah, the same way, I've always taken the flu shot, and I'm going to take it now, and I'm going to do it.
Right.
But I think one of the things, so for folks who are going to do it, yeah, they can check with these different places and find out when they're open. They all take it, like Mark Health Services. If you don't have, if they're people that don't have insurance, they will still do it. They have coverage. The other places, of course, want to charge your insurance if you have it. So keep that in mind.
Right. Exactly.
But until your other questions, one of the things to try to, I mean, one thing we have to recognize is that we didn't start on a even path in the first place. We have a lot of things going on in our community, just the risky behaviors and the things that we do that's tied to stress and tied to our community and how it's treated. So that's all within there without a single pandemic or twindemic, the way you call it now.
Right.
But there are also extreme amount of strong families within our community. And unfortunately, we hear more about the families that are having problems than the strong families. But we've got a lot of strong families in Milwaukee. Those are the ones that at least could take the lead in terms of making sure that they connect with their families, and a lot of them have. I mean, that I talked to, they've got to figure out, this is where we go, this is where we don't go, this is when we go, this is when we come back. A lot of them are kind of making up a plan, a family plan that really addresses, that addresses our strength as being communal, as you say, in the first place, by planning something. The ones who have gone off, I couldn't say it really more than off the rails in the first place.
Right.
Sometimes they come back if they're invited to come back, but they have to come back. But if they come back, they have to abide by the rules. There's no family that I know of that you don't have rules and things. This is even more important now. And so it might be very hard, but you can't run the risk of that person running in and out and going places and meeting up with people and bringing that disease back into the house or whatever.
Right.
I mean, so
right.
It's got to be, the trust has got to be that person's going to be there, or it's going to stay where it is now, so if you're more likely to have somebody that you need, because everybody doesn't know. Again, remember, COVID, about 40% of people who have COVID have no symptoms. So you can't just use that. You got to be able to talk to people about where you go, who you've been with. I mean, they might find nosy, but those are practical things you got to ask, especially if you got kids and other sick people around.
Right.
And
right.
And then the mitigating things I talked about before, they should be wearing a mask all the time. They should watch their distancing, make sure they do good hand washing, and then make sure that they avoid places which they pretty much have shown. Through looking at the public health lens, it's these restaurants, bars, as I said, now the schools, because they've opened them back up and they're back in there, that those are the places that seem to be most likely for it to spread. And you could be doing nothing wrong, but if you're there and you haven't figured out, maybe I should just do my work at home, or they were just talking about today where a family had two kids who had tested positive, and the mother sent them to school anyway.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of behavior, and that's everybody. I don't know if that family's black or white or not, but it doesn't matter. It's the matter of the behavior, what each family and each person in that family has to do.
Right.
So they got to make sure. My family knows that they don't come visit me if they've been around folks that I don't know.
Okay.
They would do that. That's kind of a good.
That's a good test. That's a good test.
Yeah, that they know that, you know. Mm-hmm. They won't come for. They use about 10 days now. They used to be 10 to 14. Now they do 10 days, especially if they hear anything.
Let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. Really. Okay, so one of the things you just said that was real frightening is that a lot of times there's no symptoms for it. But what now, so let's go back again to a senior person like myself. What is one of the key symptoms or behaviors that you might pick up that might warrant you really need to go check some stuff out? Like we know when a heart attack, they told us about pain in the arm or things like that. You know, what is one for COVID that we need to really pay attention to?
Well, what they found, and again, it keeps changing if you look at CDC.
Yeah, I noticed it keeps changing,
On it pretty clearly. And one of the main things is temperature, although, you know, you can have the temperature for other things. That's why they check now. If you guys have gone into hospitals or some place now, that a lot of places will check your temperature.
Right.
And your temperature could be fine and you still have COVID.
Right.
The temperature piece is clearly one of the things that they look at. The breathing, all of a sudden, and so you're not like me. Like I said, I'm coughing and everything, but that's all up in my, that's my allergies and stuff, so it's all up in my nose, but it's not in my chest at all.
Okay.
So people say that if I can't breathe, what we talk about, that's serious, that they can't breathe. So that's another one that they find. Another one is what my granddaughter had, where all of a sudden she just couldn't
taste
it. This
conference has reached its maximum duration and will end in 1 minute.
Because there's at least about... Hello?
Yeah, I know somebody's coming in now. Okay.
Yeah, about 10 or 12 symptoms now, but those are the ones that they look at the most. If they're looking at an extreme tiredness, you know, where people, I mean, you know your own level of that. And that's why I'm back to saying that if you know some relative or friend that you know that lives by themselves, they could fall asleep and just don't wake up.
Okay.
They're so deadly. So I would say those are the ones that they really, their eyes, you know, they look for. If any of that's going on, they really check. There's some of the regular ones, GI symptoms, you know, other kinds of things, but those are the ones that they really look at. I'm talking about it was hard for them to breathe. Like I said, that would
I guess that. Now things like Dr. McManus, are you there? Hello. Dr. McManus, are you there?
Recorded or transcribed.
Dr. McManus?
Hello?
Hello? Dr. McManus?
Hello?
Yes. Hi, can you hear me?
You sound kind of far in the distance. Let me try and call right back.
Okay, Dr. McManus, are you still on?
Dr. Rogers, this is Theodore Lush calling.
Right, I hear you, Brother Lush. I hear you well. Brother White, okay. You hear me? Brother White, do you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, but you sound like you're in the vacuum.
Can you hear me better now?
No, sounds the same.
Still the same, okay.
Oh, now you're coming through clear.
Oh, okay, all right. And I think I might have lost Dr. McManus. I don't know. I'm not quite sure what happened. Hopefully she'll call back on. Back there. Brother Lush, can you hear me better now?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. All right. We got knocked off for some reason. Could have been an internet issue. Not quite sure. But we are talking to Dr. Pat McManus, and hopefully she will log back on in just a second. And we're going to conclude this conversation and give us a chance to everybody to talk with her for just a second.
Is she a medical doctor?
She has a PhD in nursing.
Ah, I see. Okay.
Okay, you can come on back on now, Dr. McManus.
Okay. So.
Okay. Yeah, she has a PhD in nursing, and she runs a health agency here in Milwaukee called the Wisconsin Black Health Coalition.
Okay. All right.
And she was a
health. I do have a question.
Okay.
Hello. I got cut off again.
Okay.
I don't know what's going on.
There you are. You there?
I'm back.
No telling, yep. Doc. No telling what this stuff is. Okay. Good That's enough. Good. And I know we
so
had done.
What was I talking?
Well, I was getting ready to ask you a question about. Okay. We were talking about some of the symptoms that are there, and then we've got some folk on the online that want to ask you some questions as well. But I just want to ask you about that one they talked about all the time about if you don't have smell or taste, is that still a real issue to be concerned with?
That's still because that's so odd that it does seem strange again. But they still go by how severe. The rest of your symptoms might be, like I said, like my granddaughter. They didn't put her in a hospital or anything, but she was quarantined at home for 10 days with her fiance. He didn't have that. They didn't have the same. That's like they lived together, and he didn't have the same symptoms. His symptoms was he had more GI problems and the sleep. He just couldn't wake up half the time. He'd just sleep almost the whole day and that kind of stuff.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah, so that like I said, those are the ones that they look at more. I think initially 3 or 4 months ago, they had so many people in the hospital that they couldn't take people for just those kinds of things.
Okay.
Although those are extremely serious.
Okay.
Now they tend to, their hospital beds are more open. They tend to take people, you know. But like I said, too, it's the illness itself is such a problem, but then the fact that you can't be with your family, you know, you can't be at your bedside, you can't be anywhere near. I mean, so it has some psychological consequences too.
I got you.
Just the life
you.
That you, you know, you can't be with your loved ones, you know, until they die. I mean, this is just one that, I mean, it's truly, truly, over all my years of working, I find this one, with all those things, not just the disease itself, but what it does, the illness itself.
Right, exactly.
And your family, with communal people, and so not to have your friends or your family around, that's devastating, you know.
Yeah, this is catastrophic, it really is. Let me go to a couple of our listeners who are calling. Brother Lush, you can go right ahead with your question.
Good evening, Dr. McManus. It's a pleasure meeting you.
Good evening.
The question I have is, hopefully it's not along the lines of insurance or things of that nature, but you know, the ultimate really has to happen. We really, because we're human, part of our humanity means that we're going to have to make that transition. What is it True. That we need to be doing right now? Because we have the pandemics, because we have the kind and type of environment with regards to flu season coming into play. So what are the things that we need to be doing for ourselves to prepare for that ultimate transition? Hopefully it won't be COVID or some sort of real ill issue, but what is it that we really need to be focused on while we're still alive in preparation for that transition?
Well, I don't think it's any different than what we should be doing for that in the first place. I mean, we don't, right? I mean, many of us don't until something happens and somebody gets an illness and things like that. But certainly in terms of what your obligations are, you know, if you got a family, if you got a wife, if you got kids, vice versa, if you got a husband and whatever, and what happens with you. If they're younger kids, who would you want to take care of them? You know, where would you live? It's the standard kind of thing that, and this can occur so fast that, or so long, because there have been people who've been on a ventilator in the hospital for months. So some go right in and they die the next day. It is so hard to. So I guess it should be part of what I talked about earlier in terms of the family getting together and making decisions on what needs to happen in case somebody gets the virus. And what they want to do about it, instead of waiting until they get the virus, then folks are all upset. I mean, I talked to my own family the same way. Like I said, we had no idea. I mean, you know, her age, she's 28, and so that's that age now. You know, that you would think, well, they're not going to have a problem, but it shows you. But they had a mild, but they did have mild cases, and. Mm-hmm. Still the young that we've lost babies all the way up to people 80, 90 years old, but we've also had people 90 years old surviving. So yeah. I think it's hard to say something that everybody ought to do the same thing. We need to get together as a family and discuss how you're going to handle that, what right. you're going to do. Right. And we don't do that. We haven't done it. So I think that's a good question. And I think it's serious because this is a disease that we know people can die. I mean, it's just automatic. It doesn't mean they will, but we know they can. So we need to have those really hard conversations with the family, you know, based on whatever religion you have, those folks, whoever you have that, you know, that you protest to and have. You need to have that, they need to have those conversations and see and not wait until it's too late.
Thank you.
I hope that was helpful.
Right. Thank you.
Yes. Brother White, any questions you got? How are you doing tonight, my brother?
I'm doing fine, Dr. Rogers, and to your guests, good evening.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a particular question. I just have a comment. I've been stricken since this thing started with the lack of urgency on the part of this government and people in general. It's like a large portion of the people in this country don't believe that there's no virus. Some of Trump supporters, they don't believe. I don't know what they think is happening. Or, you know, that don't they? I know some of them had to have family that's been sick or something.
Right.
But the idea that when this thing struck, it was left up to individual governors of individual states of what they want to do, right. And certain cities decided to shut down, and then the governor said they're not going to shut down. And you know, in the case of a national emergency, it wouldn't be voluntary. There would be a mandate that this is what everybody has to do, and this is what everybody has to do right now.
Right.
For
that's what happened.
For a virus that's killed more people than died in Vietnam and Iran and Iraq and all that combined, when the 9/11 was attacked, they didn't say, well, each governor of each state can decide what they want to do about terrorism. There was a national mandate, and everybody had to respond because it was a national emergency. But that doesn't seem to be the issue, and it's just puzzling to me what people think is going on.
Well, I mean, this is what you're talking about. That's exactly what happened, and why we're in the mess we're in, and not to even talk about the fact that we've had over 200,000 people dies because there wasn't. Now, one of the things that Obama did was because Obama dealt with the pandemic, and that was H1N1 and Ebola. You know, the both of those things were on his watch. So he left a pandemic team at the White House. You know, they were all, and that was one of the first things that Trump got rid of, was that we don't need that, you know. And even when it happened, he didn't call them back. And to him, he operates, to him, he runs, you know, the White House and our government like a business. And based on what's been happening the last couple of days and reading his taxes and all that kind of stuff, not very well. And what's happening now is a product of that, the fact that we didn't have, because one of the things many of the other countries that got it, they did exactly what you're talking about. It was a national plan. He should have had a national plan, but his thing was, you know, you states decide what you're going to do on your own. And then he got such political pushback, then he decided to do something nationally, then he changed it, and then he stopped doing it. I mean, it's been a disaster, and the results are the number of deaths that we've had. We've had more deaths in our country than any other country, because we don't have exactly what you're talking about, national plan. He still doesn't have a, like I said, he's looking to talk about this vaccine that he wants to, that's supposed to be happening. And I told somebody, I said, I bet you that somewhere down the line that he has a stake in this vaccine, you know, getting money from this so-called vaccine that they're pushing.
I guarantee it.
I have no doubt about that, just the way he operates, that because he doesn't care about anything. The man is a sociopath. He really doesn't care about it. He can't care. He doesn't even know how, and so it's all about him. And he's narcissistic. It's all about him. I had somebody laugh because I told him, I said that when he first became president, I said he's a narcissistic sociopath. The only one I missed when they had a group of therapists, or psychiatrists, on TV was that the paranoid. He's extremely paranoid.
Yeah.
But then when you do that, everything, Trump does everything about him. And if it's not about him, he could care less.
Right.
And so that's how he's devastated this country, as well as all these people who died. But see, but none of his folks have died. And I don't know if he would care even if they did. He does not have a capacity to even care. And that's really serious and really deadly. So clearly, if nothing else, trying to get him out of there, we have to. Another 4 years, we won't have a country at all if he's left in there.
Yeah, no doubt about that.
Because he won't do anything then. He won't even have to worry about running again. Although all of a sudden, I don't know if you've been paying attention, but all of a sudden he talks about 12 years. We'll talk about it. Change the Constitution, I guess, so that he could be there 12 years. But now you see why, because he really doesn't want to go back to hassle with all the money he's made off of being the president.
Yeah, he's made a lot. He's made a lot.
Clause that said he shouldn't be earning any money from us and stuff. So it's for the country, and he's done that. So yeah, I mean, it's just really clear. He didn't do anything because he didn't care. If it looks at everything, they talked about the term a day trader, and I'd heard that term before and had to find out what it was, the fact that he is a day trader. So for that day, that's, if he talks about what he's going to do and not going to do, that's what he is that day. And then the next day, he does something else. But it's still always about him,
mm-hmm.
not about the people that he talked to, that he, you know, did a deal, could be gone the next day. I mean, this man has really devastated this community.
Yes,
I mean, this country, not community,
no doubt
the whole
about
country.
It. And that's both black, white, yeah. Hispanic, hey, whoever lives here, anybody.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just not black
people. Everybody.
Yeah, everybody.
I mean, separating those kids from their parents, I mean, that's one of the most inhuman things I've ever even heard of.
Mm-hmm.
And then that became a business, building up all these places to put these kids in and stuff. I mean, that is just really kind of beyond sick. I don't even know what to say, but it's about business. So you've got them creating that business. Now you hear about one of the doctors at one of these places giving these women all these hysterectomies when there was no medical reason for the hysterectomies. To me, that just meant they wanted to make sure they didn't have no more babies.
Right.
If they couldn't get them out, and they're going to be here, because he don't want no more babies, especially not any more Hispanic babies.
So they're
taking the women and doing hysterectomy. They wake up, they think they're having a minor surgery for something they said they had, and they wake up and they have no uterus.
Hmm.
That's sick.
Yeah, it is. That's genocide. That's the other question I wanted to ask you about as well. You know, with so much talk mm-hmm. about the COVID and influenza coming in and looking at a lot of the mental stress, a lot of these other killers that were taking us out, there's no more, I'm not saying there's not a focus on them, but they're not talking about the what cancer is continually still doing, and what's being done in that realm. Have any of the efforts, you know, to stop some of those things that, particularly the African-American community play with, breast cancer among African-American women, prostate cancer among men, where are they now? Where are those initiatives? And
well, those things haven't really changed in terms of what people have been doing about it. It's still a matter of getting people in to get the mammograms, get checked and everything. It's just that it hasn't been placed on the burner. They're still doing it. They're still doing evaluations. They're still doing exams to see if people have, if they find out. A couple of friends of mine had to have breast cancer surgery and stuff like that during this time. So those things are still going on. What they did do, though, they did slow up non-emergency surgeries,
right,
or things like that. That was, I guess I would say that was probably one of the impacts.
Right.
Is that if it wasn't, so it wasn't something that needed to happen right away, they delayed some of that. But
right,
any other regular surgeries, they would do that. They would have them come in. Those folks they would still see. So, the system didn't work that well for us anyway. So unless you push it, you know, the people have to do, but advocate for it. So that's still there in terms of, like I said, I think the community health clinics have done a lot in terms of pushing for services and helping people get services.
Right.
That wasn't there before. But from my understanding, none of that has been slowed down. If somebody needed to have surgery, they had it. I didn't hear of anything like that. It's just a matter of some people, elective, say you have to have an elective surgery. That was put on hold for about 4 or 5 months. Now that's open again.
Okay.
Elective surgeries that they're starting to do again, and not just emergency. But anybody who needs emergency surgery, that was still going on as far as I know.
Right. Because it was being said at one time that it was just not safe to go to the hospitals anymore. Hospitals were refusing to accept certain people or those kind of things. So you know, some of that's opened back up again. I mean, like I remember right here.
Right, And they weren't, if somebody was sick, they were accepting them whether they wanted them. It depends on what was going on with them. And
okay,
they still would have been in trouble for turning people away who really needed to be seen or really need to have surgery. That my understanding, was not happening. But the terror with finding out that they had the COVID-19, especially they could have had some really serious symptoms that probably made them feel that they should have been hospitalized and they weren't because they didn't have the beds. They would send them home to quarantine, as I mentioned before, like David Crowley had and David Bowen. Both of those folks had it.
Mm.
But when they're younger, it wasn't. Some folks thought if I have it, I ought to be hospitalized. And that they do the standard triage that's done on the battlefield or here. But there were some people who thought they should have been in, and some of them should have. I think there was a case that was in the paper of a woman that had all the whole family had been tested positive. She was having really bad symptoms, and they were telling her that she didn't need to be hospitalized, but
right,
they got her family fought for, and they did hospitalize, and she did okay. So, yeah, so there are times, I mean, we still black, you know.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
You may have to fight when nobody else has to. I'm sure of that because I've seen it happen before. But a couple of cases I heard about, I was like, how come they didn't hospitalize them with those kind of symptoms, you know? So unless you have somebody can advocate for it, and they can talk you into, and that's why I'm most concerned about somebody who's living by themselves and they're having symptoms and stuff like that, then it's double in terms of probably predicting that they're going to be found dead. But they didn't have a lot of those, so I think we kind of pushed. I know I started calling the hospitals, asking what they were doing and stuff, and they kind of like, oh, Lord, not her. Yeah, me.
Right.
I want to know what's up. I was asking questions and stuff, and if they know we looking and watching, they do what they're supposed to do. But if we don't,
yeah,
they just, you know, tell them, and most especially the elderly, they don't go to the hospital no way. So they come, oh, you don't have to come. I mean, because my sister, it wasn't COVID, but she needed to be in hospital. So we had to have a little conversation over there, you know, and they had her in for a couple of days and stuff like that. So
right,
they were
exactly.
doing it, but we got to watch them.
Right.
We have no choice.
So basically, what we are hearing about the Chinese have claim that they do have a vaccine. Some of that is not still safe to move forward. And it's not just politics. Is that really real health concerns? Because some of that, I'm sure, is heavy politics. But, I mean...
Yeah,
do they have
It is. I mean, the thing is they're all... There's about 100 different organizations that are supposed to be trying to test these vaccines and figure out what's going on. And I guess the one that would try to get the first one, but... And I can't say that some of them may be good, may be accurate, but pushing ahead the way they are, that scares me. Now, that's the politics in it.
Okay.
The president wants it done before November, if not then, at least by the end of the year, so he can say that he's done something.
Right.
That's politics. That's not good.
That's
not good medicine.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That is not good medicine. And so, I couldn't endorse any of them. Like I said, when the average time is 4 years, and they will cut it down to 8 or 9 months. No, even with the fact that, we have the technology and those kind of things can make things go faster. When you got, that's like I said, with, Dr. Melchior and some of these other folks, they're like, no, like the guy that's over CDC, he's saying wearing this mask is probably more powerful than the vaccine.
Exactly.
Ooh, they're mad at him, but he told the truth.
Okay. Mm.
Okay.
Brother Lush, Brother Herbie, any comments, any further comments? Dr. McManus?
Yeah.
Brother Lush, Brother White, any more comments? Well, this has been truly enlightening, Dr. McManus. What is the Black Health Coalition working on now? What are some of your initiatives in the light of this?
In light of this, well, one of the things I started a couple of months ago, I started a Facebook Live that I have, I'll be on tomorrow, actually.
Right, yeah, I've seen that. I've seen that.
On 3 o'clock on Wednesdays and Saturdays. And, what I talk about is the main issues of the day are, and that's usually what's happening with, I talk about anything new that I know that's going on with COVID to let people know and give people information, especially those in terms of those they got to make decisions about whether they send their kids to school or don't. I made it clear that people understood that this is not like, if you just let your kids stay home because you don't want them to go or something that you can get in trouble. No, you have a right. This is a public health emergency. But you're not to have your kids in there. That will not. They can't do that. They can't come out and arrest you for that.
Right.
But not sending your kids to school. You have the perfect right. And I didn't see that anywhere. So that's what I'm doing. And then the vote, obviously, getting out the vote. Those are the two things
that I've been
talking a lot about,
mm-hmm.
and making sure that, because even right now it's a question of if people are coming in and they don't know whether they've been tested, you don't know if they've been tested or if they didn't wear their mask. It's a question saying, I heard something about where the question saying it's a First Amendment right, that you can't stop people from voting. And my point was, well, yeah, I don't have a problem with that because I don't want anybody stopping me from voting too, but they need to have a mask on.
Right.
You're saying that you can't wait. They come in and don't want to wear a mask, so I'm trying to figure out what they're doing with that. I've asked several people to check on that and what they're going to do with that, because if they come in and then they don't wear a mask and nobody says anything to them, then the people are like, well, why am I wearing a mask then?
Mm-hmm.
Although that's the reason, mm-hmm. that you definitely should keep it on.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one of the things that we're doing. And as I said, I just submitted a grant because I want to do some education to our community around vaccines and immunizations, the history of it, where it stands now, to give them good information for them to make their own decision. And there's a we're establishing a coalition out of this grant on it, vaccines that would keep us directly tied to the state, the state tied to us.
Right, exactly.
And in that way, people have to come and talk to us about what's going on.
Right. I noticed lately
I'll find out whether we get this grant or not, but
right.
I think it'd be very important for us to be able to have that connection and also have, but the point was too, is for people to be able to speak and say, well, no, I'm not going to do the vaccine, or I'm not, and not just COVID, but even the other vaccine. And not tell somebody, well, if mm-hmm. you don't do this, you're not taking the best for your child, you're not doing whatever. People have to make those decisions based on their experience and their trust.
Right.
And there's many reasons why we don't trust the system.
I guess.
And I certainly understand that.
Yeah, right.
So we want to have a safe environment where people can really express how they feel.
Long history of that.
And then tell the state to kind of deal, you know, see if the state's going to, what are you going to do about that? Right. So that's mainly what we're doing now. We kind of shut down on the other things because we saw pregnant women in the jail and at the House of Corrections, and you can't get in there now because of everything going on. We lost one of our major grants, so we're like everybody else. We're working to try to keep the doors open, but
exactly.
So far we've been able to do that.
You know, I look at a lot of times because I have a consulting business that does work with SAMHSA. And some of the initiatives mm-hmm. that they are doing, and a lot of it is focused around mental health. Is there a direct connection between the COVID situation and a lot of the things that we're seeing in the rising number of domestic violence? And when I say the question I'm asking is a direct connection. But then I know there's always subsidiary connections with things like that based on stress and trauma. But do you think there's a direct connection to that? Because I've heard some of that lately.
Direct connections, I don't know of one. And I know you mentioned that actually that's one of the things I talked about a month or so ago on my Facebook Live program was the increase in domestic violence and also the increase in the number of children taken from child welfare tied to that or some other reason that's tied to it that we're finding more and more kids are being taken. And as far as I know, I raised that issue too, as far as I know, they haven't done anything about that yet, which is not surprising. But like if you've got problems in a home and you have this kind of stress, there's going to be domestic violence. And part of that we want to do too is to help women, primarily women, but men can be affected by it as well.
Right.
But tying it up, the way we tie it to even the communities, whether it's the city or where it's the county, where it's the state, it's got to be done in such a way that they don't all of a sudden just take over the power and tell us what we can do and can't do. That's why it takes a little while to make sure they understand that we're asking them to do what they're supposed to do. So,
okay, yeah, because I was thinking about that. I remember the case, the case with the brother that killed his family. That's the one that he killed the kids and the wife and I think it was his girlfriend's common law wife, and he killed the children. A couple of months ago. That's where I heard that discussion come in about that direct connection. Isolation, having to be in the house together, all that like that, all of that kind of behavior and those results of that. That's kind of where I heard that. I was just wondering what kind of research had been done around looking at that and what, if you gotta be quarantined, you gotta be quarantined, you can't come out. So how do we as a community address that? And a lot of that has to do with our living conditions where a lot of us live. Small houses, these old German homes that, were not designed to hold five and six kids. That can be catastrophic. Bathroom situations that could occur out of some of that. I just thinking a lot of that residual kind of stuff is something I think we have to look at as a community. Don't you think that would be important?
Yeah, those things are very important, and that's one of the things that I did too. And when I talked about COVID, about what happens if someone in your home is either actually diagnosed with the disease or diagnosed being, that you were with somebody that could have it, is there a way you got it set up that can people go somewhere else? That can a person be in a room by themselves? Just like you're talking about, most of our homes that folks have, that might be a problem. That's the planning part. Is there another family member they can go to if that happens? It's almost kind of like, having a plan if your house gets on fire or something like that.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
We used to have that kind of thing that we don't have. We need to have that with especially with COVID-19, especially now if they're basically saying that this is the second wave coming in, and that they're predicting 300,000 to 400,000 people dead by the end of the year. I mean, that is just astounding. And this man, he doesn't. I mean, his, if he took a lie detector test, his heartbeat would be steady,
right?
Because he really does not have the capacity to even care about these kind of things.
Right.
That's other people's problems.
Yeah.
You know, right. He handles it like a business. But like I said, the way he handles business,
it's now like it's all out the casino. Yeah, right. He runs it like the casino. That's what he is.
Yes. Yeah. That's he's just, yeah. So clearly the other part of that, yeah, is having people as a family. What are we going to do? How do we handle that?
Yeah,
you
so
know?
Families and, should sit down and map that, out plans and
get exactly.
Things that, right,
plans.
Exactly.
That's right.
That's powerful.
Exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, and then the other thing is, like, there's so many dimensions to this. And, I mean, we could be all night talking about it, but I really appreciate you coming on and addressing what we could. You know, I think about, I live right across the street from that was at one time a very large church congregation. And on Sundays when I first moved here, you could find cars everywhere. You can look out the window now, Sunday at 11 o'clock, there's about 3 cars parked out in front of it. And I don't think they're just doing the virtual thing. What effect is that going to have on a socialization process? Because, you know, black folk, we believe in our churches. Whether it's
a good thing or a bad thing,
we still believe in them.
Mm-hmm. There's been conversations about that too, in terms of like you said, that's it. Especially for reasons too, because folks come to church, especially the first Sunday. That's when they, you know, give their tithes, and that's what the church depends on to stay up.
That's right.
Stay on to it, and I'm hearing that is a major problem, you know. And then also, like I said, just getting together and singing and what all the things they have to do.
Yeah. That's what makes us helps us get through the week.
They don't do it.
Right.
You still got some churches that do it anyway.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I mean, that's a very big part of what gets us through the week. You know, the blacks,
right.
And
yeah.
even during our captivity, our years of captivity, it was always that Sunday thing that they looked forward to go down by the creek.
That's right.
What they call the invisible institution. Mm-hmm. And sing songs and pray and hold hands and hold each other and rub our wounds, you know. See, all that's gone.
Yeah, and plan other things that we have to do. You know, like you said, like on I don't know if you saw the movie Harriet, but you know they showed the pastor was, you know, just kissing, you know, the owner's butt and stuff like that, and doing everything. Then find out he was the leader of the Underground Railroad.
Right.
He did what he had to do what he, you know, he did that to make sure he could do what was necessary to get folks out of there.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
And so a lot of that, the things that we do, try to get things, but whether the church is part of it, it's always been more, because one of the books I have talked about that, Like a Mighty River,
right.
The role that churches played in, again, the Underground Railroad, even after that.
Everything.
What people needed, the churches did a lot of work. Poor people wasn't just sitting in church and praying.
Civil rights,
you know?
Yeah, everything, every all that. The whole
that's
bit.
Right, all that, mm-hmm. Exactly.
You're
exactly right.
Well, any closing remarks? We got about 2-3 minutes left. Any closing remarks you'd like to leave us?
For me, or were you talking to me?
Yes, yeah. I was saying any closing remarks. Any last thought? Last minute thoughts?
No, because I think I think people got to be tired of me talking by now, you know.
Right.
But I always appreciate being asked, and I certainly will come anytime I can.
Yes,
and,
indeed.
Because I think these are great to have these discussions, these conversations.
Yeah, we got
to
have
important to our own sanity.
Right, exactly.
And our own ability to try to help as we can, not only help ourselves, but help our community. So
right.
I do thank you for inviting me.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And to our audience that have stayed on with us, I know this wasn't one of those political fight discussions, but at least it's one that we got to have, as Dr. McManus says, because this is life or death, and we got to deal with that. Brother Lush, I always appreciate
that
you,
it
my brother. Brother White, you as well. You hung with us right to the end. So anyway, thank you so much. We'll be back next week. Right here on the Black Reality Think Tank, we're going to talk about a brother that wrote a book called Black Laws. And we want to kind of look at what that means and how that relates to some things. And so he's agreed to come on next week and be with us. So everyone have a real safe and productive week, and we will see you here next Tuesday. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you, Dr. McManus.
Go down,
Moses,
way